Family relationships. I take a professional interest in those advice columns that, you know, you can read in the newspaper or someplace. And I've noticed that they involve a lot of broken relationships within families. People who've been wronged and who don't know how to get past it and how to fix it. It seems like the closer you are to someone who's hurt you, the harder that it is. Perhaps because you feel that, well, if they really love me, they should have known better than to hurt me like that. But whatever the reason, it's not new, as the Bible story about Joseph and his brothers gives us a prime example. Joseph and his 11 brothers were the great-grandchildren of Abraham and Sarah. And the brothers, we heard, got irritated because Joseph was the favorite one and never let them forget it. So they sold him to the slave traders, who took him to Egypt, where it turned out that he made so good that he became second only to the Pharaoh. And when the famine struck, and the brothers had to come to Egypt and beg Joseph for food, they thought that he would punish them. But instead, he forgave them and invited the whole family to come and live with him. So many families, both biological and church families, because remember, this starts out with Peter saying, if somebody in the church sins against me, how many times should I forgive them? That's how the parable starts. So many families, both biological and church families, live with cut-off relationships and the pain that those wounds cause because they can't find ways to reconcile. And the closer you were before the rupture, the deeper the pain, and the more personally you take a slight or an injury. And then that keeps the group, whether it's a family or a church, from accomplishing their mission. Because as Jesus said, a house divided against itself cannot stand. Look at how the Lutheran witness has been harmed by the split in this country between the evangelical Lutherans and the Missouri Synod. Or how the Muslims suffer because of the Sunni-Shia split. Or how congregations have fractured over flowers or candles. The congregation in Rome that an exasperated St. Paul was writing to was dividing over eating habits and celebrating festivals or not. Jesus knows that he's leaving the church to humans. And being fully human himself, he understands our human nature perfectly. And he knows that these kinds of fights are coming. He knows that after he's gone, these fights will get in the way of the proclaiming of the good news of God's love, the mission that he's come to reveal, and that mission that he's entrusting to his followers, the church, and get in the way big time, as church history and today's religion news tells us. His instructions to the church on fixing its internal relationships are not directed at civil society, but at the family of the church. He tells them how to deal with conflict, first by individual conversation, and if needed, by having a couple of people present so that they can be sure they're really hearing each other, and then by starting the relationship fresh. And now he goes on to say that to start fresh, we need a framework of forgiveness, otherwise you can't start over. The point is to be able to handle the disputes within the community while maintaining relationships. We can't be good witnesses to the world without getting our own house in order. But we humans know all about irreconcilable differences. So how should a family and a church handle these? The disciples want to know, when is enough enough? 7 times? When can we stop beating ourselves up and on a need to forgive? When can we just walk away? Never, says Jesus. No matter what, your duty to care about each other never ends. But what about those hurts you just can't forgive? While forgiveness is called for, recommended, and even commanded, Forgiveness can't be forced. This past week, we again remembered the losses of 9/11. It can be hard to understand why some of those people who lost loved ones on 9/11 have been able to move on to forgiveness, and others of us that have no personal stake in it, no personal struggle with the loss, just can't. We admire the victims of crime and their families who forgive publicly on the news, and at the same time, we shake our hands and say, never. I hope the criminal gets the worst that can happen to him. Nor is the mystery of forgiveness limited to the enormity of 9/11 or to the victims of horrific crimes. I know that I, and possibly each of you, have at one time or another gotten stuck by some offense or personal slight and then overlooked the manifold grace that's been extended to us by countless others when we've been given the benefit of the doubt or excused. And sometimes we get offended just because we suspect the motives of the offender without even knowing all the facts. And yet we carry that anger and ignore the times when others have put the best construction on what we do or what we say. Ugh. So, do we have to be as forgiving as God to merit God's forgiveness? That's sometimes how this parable has been interpreted. But let's take a closer look at it. First, this king. Jesus' hearers would have never allegorized this king to be God. He's a cruel and lawless plutocrat who sells people into slavery and tortures them. But he wipes out the debt of a servant who could never repay him. And Jesus' hearers expect that the moral of the story will be that if somebody as evil, bad as this king could do that, forgive a large debt, then we ought to be able to forgive also the small debts. And that in the story, the servant will cancel the small debt owed by a colleague. So when he doesn't, Jesus' audience is outraged and finds themselves siding with and approving of the illegal actions of a cruel autocrat. Oops. They have become the unforgiving servant. People take out their anger on each other. They judge, they punish, they lash out. And they forget that it's grace and mercy that have given meaning and purpose to their lives and to their church community to start with. They forget that we all stand before the judgment seat of God. This parable is a warning about what happens when we don't forgive. The blessing to you of forgiveness is the lifting of a burden, the releasing of a debt, the refusal to allow past actions and failures to define your future. So St. Paul gives us, the church, some great advice for unbinding our relationships and free us from mission. He says, welcome those with weak theology, and not for the purpose of proving them wrong. Who are you to pass judgment? For we will all stand before the judgment seat of God and be accountable to God, says Paul. Do you really want to identify with the tattletale servants or the capricious king in this parable? No, me neither. This whole story operates the way the world works and not how things work in God's kingdom or how they should work among God's people. The relationship in the king's household, all those relationships are now ruined, and the innocent wife and children suffer. Jesus is calling his church to be different from the world, and he sets us the example of giving infinite forgiveness to each of us when we fail. And for that we can say, thanks be to God. Amen.